Madhava Jaya Kunjabihari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunjabihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Stutara Satashi Srimadha Devanga Shla A.C. Bhakti Vranta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda Ki Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sega Host Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Srivas Arigaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopakavina Shamakunda Radha Kunigiri Govardhana Ki Shri Vrindavan Dhamma ki, Shri Mayapur Dhamma ki, Ganga Maya ki, Jamuna Maya ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Tam tvam vidhama bhagavan param param atma tattvam satvena sambratiratim rachayantam esham yate nutapa vidhir vridha bhakti yoga Ugrantayo hridi vidhur munayo viragha Translation. We know that you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, who manifests His transcendental form in the uncontaminated mode of pure goodness. This transcendental eternal form of your personality can be understood only by your mercy, through unflinching devotional service, by great sages whose hearts have been purified in the devotional way. Purport. The Absolute Truth can be understood in three features: impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here it is admitted that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the last word in understanding the Absolute Truth. Even though the four Kumaras were instructed by the great learned father, Brahma, they could not actually understand the Absolute Truth. They could only understand the Supreme Absolute Truth when they personally saw the Personality of Godhead with their own eyes. In other words, if one sees or understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the other two features of the Absolute Truth, namely impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma, are also automatically understood. Therefore, the Kumaras confirmed, you are the ultimate Absolute Truth. The impersonalists may argue that since the Supreme Personality of Godhead was so nicely decorated, he was therefore not the Absolute Truth. But here it is confirmed that all the variegatedness of the Absolute Platform is constituted of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. In the material world, any quality, goodness, passion, or ignorance, is contaminated. Even the quality of goodness here in the material world is not free from tinges of passion and ignorance. But in the transcendental world, only pure goodness without any tinge of passion or ignorance exists. Therefore, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his variegated pastimes and paraphernalia are all pure sattva guna. Such variegatedness and pure goodness is exhibited eternally by the Lord for the satisfaction of the devotee. The devotee does not want to see the Supreme Personality of Absolute Truth in voidness or impersonalism. In one sense, absolute transcendental variegatedness is meant only for the devotees, not for others. Because this distinct feature of transcendental variegatedness can be understood only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord and not by mental speculation or the ascending process. It is said that one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead when one is even slightly favored by him. Without his mercy, a man may speculate for thousands of years and not understand what is actually the absolute truth. This mercy can be perceived by the devotees when he is completely free from contamination. It is stated, therefore, that only when all contamination is rooted out and the devotee is completely detached from material attractions can he receive this mercy of the Lord. So this principle of understanding the person, the Supreme Person, this is our goal, our ultimate goal. But in this, then, there's many delicate points, is that we're trying to get from this material platform to the spiritual. The difficulty comes in, why are we on this platform, the material platform? We're here not because, you know, Krishna has a strange sense of humor, right? We're here because when we see transcendental variety, transcendental form, we want to control and enjoy it. So that's a problem. So this transcendental form, this transcendental potency is alive, right? They're real people, and they don't like to be looked at, you know, from a sensuous perspective. So therefore, Krishna, to protect his devotees, doesn't allow those who have this mood of lordship over the Lord's energy to be in the spiritual world. But there's no problem in being in the material world, because in the material world, then that the potency here is dead matter, so it's not conscious. So you can look at it all you like, and it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So this is why only by the Lord's mercy, after being freed from material contamination, is one able to perceive all this. Right? Otherwise, one could say, well, the four Kumaras, they were impersonalists, and then they saw the Lord, then they became, you know, the great devotees. They understood the Lord. But the point being here is they were impersonalists. So they were situated on the Brahman platform. They were transcendental. Right? So because of that, then when they come in contact with the Supreme Absolute Truth, then they appreciate the higher form because they are already situated in absolute truth. The Brahman platform is absolute truth. It's just lower absolute truth. While Bhagavan, that's the highest absolute truth. Does this make sense? So they were already transcendentally situated. So this will work. Otherwise, the tendency is we see something nice, we want to enjoy it. Right? We see a nice garden and that, then we want to enjoy it. We see any situation, there's some nice food, anything nice, we want to enjoy it. And naturally there's the element that we want to be in control of it. If it's so nice, the experience, then we want to get in control. We want to have it. Right? Does that make sense? So that's a problem. Because it's not appreciated, right? It's just not appreciated. So, therefore, then, even though our whole point is transcendental variety, transcendental form, transcendental relationships, but to get there, it must be very clear that the situation here, not that the form is left, but the desire to control and enjoy it, that must be left. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. That's the whole point. So, what we're trying to do then This aspect is very important. We've heard a million times about these three platforms. But the point is Bhagavan platform means you've understood the absolute truth as a person who interacts with other people. Paramatma means you understand as the absolute person who's God. But as we understand, Paramatma is alone. So the aspect that he can deal with others, that still has not been realized. Because when someone deals with someone else, that's where the problem comes. You see someone, it may or may not, generally it doesn't have so much of a tendency to spark any bad feelings. Maybe something you don't like, you know, what the clothes they wear or, you know, their nose or something. Okay, you can make some comment, but how far can you go? It's not enough to go on all day about them, right? You're not going to make any gossip so much about it, right? Now, what is it that makes something more? What sticks in the mind? It's when they interact, right? How they'll walk, talk, interact with others. That's when we'll say, oh, did you see that person? They were like this, they were like that, and did you see how they were dressed? If they were just dressed funny and just sitting there very peaceful and not materially inclined, you just think, oh, here's a saintly person. Right? But the same clothes on someone else that has an attitude and thinks they're very special. Right? Then immediately you think, oh, who they are, wow, they're dressed, let's see how funny that is. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's in the pastimes where you can make the most trouble. Therefore, the Bhagavan platform is realized in its fullness only after becoming detached from the material energy. And detached from material energy doesn't mean I don't do activities. It means I don't try to be the lord of all these activities. Right? Generally, impersonalists, they think that just by being not having any interest in the forms here, that's good enough. But the problem is they still maintain so much material contamination in the way of still lording it over the creation. Right? They think they're God, and, you know, isn't this peacefulness great? I'm special because I'm peaceful. I can see material facility and not get disturbed. Right? But it's still, you're dealing with control and enjoyment. It's different. It's opposite of what we're used to. Therefore, that's why when we're trying to convert back into the Bhagavan, we have problem. Because in the Bhagavan, it works the same way as it works on this side. Only difference is we don't want to be the controller and enjoyer. But activities are the same. Right? Does that make sense? Right? It's like, how is it? How the cows and calves are there. This mothers and children, right? Or you see the birds, Sukh and Sari. They're male and female. Right? Or the bulls go around. Krishna has no problem with it. No one has any problem with it. They're not saying, oh, this is mundane. No, because it's not. Because they're absorbed in Krishna. Does that make sense? So as long as sense gratification is seen as sense gratification, then that long that your endeavor has to be to become detached from it. But when you see sense gratification and it's not sense gratification, then you can understand the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So there's, in other words, you're going from one stage to the next to the next. You're going from the material to the transcendental to the spiritual. Does that make sense? So that means then we have to be able to appreciate that the method of getting out of the material world, then the principles of it are what function the spiritual world, but the form of it isn't. Right? Just like the material world, the form of what goes on here is the same as there, but the mood is different. Right? And transcendence, then the mood is correct, but the form is wrong. Right? Because you're not using form. Right? You're using knowledge. Right? It's perceived by the senses, so they're compatible. But does that make sense? So we're going from having it one way, reversing it to the transcendental, and then reversing it back in its pure state on the spiritual platform. So that's the process we're using. So in this, but if it's understood, because we're dealing with energy, there's no problem in these reversals, because that's how nature works anyway. Right? The feminine nature is always working on these reversals. So it's not an uncommon thing. But what makes it work is understanding the underlying principle behind it. You don't understand that, then the detail becomes very confusing. Right? So the tendency is we want the detail to be very simple. And it can be. But the principle of this devotional process of that there is transcendental form, but it's not for our enjoyment, it's for the Lord's enjoyment. So therefore, we make arrangements for His enjoyment. That then can be either very simply manifest here or very sophisticated. It doesn't matter. Because it functions at the same quality, same standard. So this is what we're trying to obtain. This is what we're trying to obtain here. So the four Kumaras, then it's given here that they are realizing this. They're seeing the Lord face to face. So then this perfection can be had by anyone. Right? So it's they've heard from Brahma, still they didn't get it. Right? So the main thing is the practice. They don't know it's there. Only then, because they're in the transcendental state, they compare Brahman transcendental to the Bhagavan transcendental, and they see the Bhagavan transcendental superior. So being intellectuals, they therefore took the step, then become devotees. Right? But we're hearing from the beginning about this difference. And so that's our determination. But still, that combined form of trying to detach yourself from the material world and attach yourself to the spiritual. Right? Detach from material form, but attach yourself to spiritual form. The process in doing that, we have a tendency to drop form. Which is okay, as long as you understand that that's what you're doing. Right? It's a perfectly bona fide process. That's what the second canto exhaustively explained, is I have a form in the material world I'm attached to, but the attachment I have to it is actually the potency that's in it, not the form itself. So that potency is what I'm attached to. And that potency is Krishna's. So therefore, actually I'm attached to Krishna, but I don't identify it like that. So then this starts to break the attachment to the material form and open the door for becoming attached to Krishna. Right? So in the beginning stages, it breaks our attachment here. But in the advanced stages, then anything here can trigger an attachment to form the Krishna in His name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing. It's just a matter of where you're working on it. But because there's the element of always remember Krishna, never forget, they seem like opposites, but they're talking about the same thing, Krishna. Always remember Krishna, don't forget Krishna. Right? But the remember and forget, that's the detail that's different. So we shouldn't become confused there. Right? So to remember, that's what we want to do. But to remember means we can't be forgetting. Right? Why don't we remember? Because we're forgetting. Right? So that's the whole point. Is that this process of bringing ourselves to the transcendental platform, becoming freed from material contamination, then is the process of never forgetting Krishna. And the process of cultivating, hearing about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes, the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, that's the process of always remembering Krishna. Right? So they both go on simultaneously. The eternal one is always remember Krishna. So as long as one's conditioned, you have to worry about don't forget Krishna. But once one's transcendentally situated and come to the platform of Bhagavan realization, then there's no more never forget Krishna. It's always, always remember Krishna. Does that make sense? Is there any questions on this? Yes. On the transcendental platform, why do they become angry? Because they're not one of these yogis with a long beard and hair, you know. Because the proper nature of something is not being followed. So it's against Dharma. See, anger is a problem when it's anger after frustration, and the frustration is your sense gratification or extended sense gratification. Right? In other words, it's your purpose, or even after your self-realization, or in other words, when there's a frustration in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, that anger then is not this anger. But at least of this anger, then that which is after Artha Kama, that's not considered in a good light, that anger. That which comes from Dharma and Moksha, that's considered in a better light because it's progressive. But it's still not perfect. So here it's a matter of the nature of those of Vaikuntha, nature of those in the transcendental platform is they behave in a particular way. So they weren't. So then their point is you don't belong here. Because this place is for those who are transcendental. And you're not behaving as someone's transcendental. So anger is not a problem like that. We see it being used so much of the time in the Lord's pastimes. Like even one of the major aspects of Krishna's personality, Dhirodatta. Then in Dhirodatta, then that is where he chastises the demons. Correct. When he says he comes, you know, again and again to chastise the demons, that's Dhirodatta. Right, and to associate with the devotees, then that will be the Dhirodatta, Dhirolalita, Dhiroprashanta, because that's pastimes. But in Dhirodatta, that will be establishing religious principles or setting, you know, making the field of activities proper. So in there, anger can be used. That's not a problem. So they're correcting the field of activities. So it's natural. While you don't really generally see anger used in the other three. Right, it means dear Lalita, you can't use it, right? If you're the Vishai, if you're the Ashrai, then it's open season. But if you're the Vishai, then no. If you're dear Prashanta, you know where the goal, the ideal, then also is perfect. You generally won't be using it. If you're using it, you would go into Dhirodatta. Dhirodatta, then as pastime, it could be used in chivalry, right? It'll be used there, or very, very mildly in conjugal joking, because there's the element of chivalry. But otherwise, it wouldn't be used. Does that make sense? So, in other words, anger is for establishing things in its correct form. That's what it's for. It's just a matter if it's used for oneself, that's improper. Just like diplomacy is meant so that the other person is comfortable in the interaction. Right? Now, if you're doing that for your own purpose, then it will give diplomacy, will have its political meaning. And if not, then diplomacy just is called etiquette. You know, just etiquette or, you know, being very kind or, you know, so many things. Like the child does something wrong and then you're very supportive. It's not that they haven't done something wrong, right? But there's no need of using anger here because there's no attitude. But if there's attitude, then pleasant things won't work, so then anger has to be used to cut through. It means, in other words, if you, to establish something, you have to use something that's more powerful. So if you can use kindness and inspiration and all these, great. Or, you know, very, you know, how you say, logical talks, or very straight talks, or becomes very strong. Whatever is strong enough that the other person becomes conscious. Right? Otherwise, it doesn't happen. Is that okay? That's okay. Okay. Has to precede the form. You mean you're more absorbed in the... Okay, so one is engaged in activities, the senses are fully engaged, but one finds that it's too intense, or what are other words that we use? Full on, you know, like this, okay? And so then how to find a balance, that you're saying? But you're putting that in light of Niranjan Maharaj's point is that the, what do you say, the needs of the individual? What do you say? Or the substance. But what is this substance? Hearing and chanting about the Lord, that should be more important than the form. That should precede the form. Okay. The whole point is it should precede the form, but you have to use the form. Right? Just like I want to cut something. So that precedes my search for a knife, right? Because unless I know what I want or what I'm actually doing, then the form doesn't have any meaning, right? Does that make sense? If I don't know that I need to cut something, I just go into the kitchen, I may pick up a rolling pin, I may pick up a spatula, right? I may pick up, you know, a box of Hing, I may pick up anything. I know I need to cut something, I go in and look for a knife. Okay? So therefore, the substance precedes the form. Okay? But at the same time, as when I look around in the kitchen, I have to be able to apply my substance to the particular form that I actually have. Right? So when I go in the kitchen and all I find is a butter knife, right? So that's what I got to work with. Does that make sense? So that's going to then temper. In other words, the substance proceeds, but the form tempers. So that's where the mistake is made. Some people take form or some people take substance. But if you take one or the other, you'll be partly successful, but you will fail also. So only when you take them both together, then it goes somewhere. Why does it go somewhere? Because you have substance. It's not what the form could do. No, it's what the form you want to do. Right? It means the knife can also put, you know, unscrew screws. You know what I'm saying? It could do so many things. I could use it to hammer in a nail. You know what I'm saying? So options are many. Speculative options are unlimited. Right? That's what the liberal is expert at, is mental speculation. They can think of unlimited ideas that you could do with a form. But reality is something else. Right? A few of those ideas are real, but most of them aren't. Right? So, but the substance, what you want, that must precede. So, what the activity, what you're supposed to accomplish, that's first. Right? Then you have a direction that you're trying to go. But the problem is there is then if you don't apply it to the form, then it can be too institutional. You understand? Means you have the rule, you have what you're trying to do. It means you have what you're trying to accomplish. But if you're not considering the form that you're accomplishing it with, then you'll be applying on them something that's greater than what they can handle or inappropriate for them. It may be correct, but doesn't work in this situation. So therefore, the time, place, and circumstance is wrong. Does that make sense? So one is looking at time, place, and circumstance. One is looking at what they want to get done. But the combination of the two is the intelligent method, is the logical method. So you have to have both, because also you can take form and take that and make that into institutional also. So therefore, you see, liberals will tend to institutionalize themselves. And anyone who doesn't fit into their narrow little box, you know, gets nuked. At the same time as those who are into rules and regulations and form based on that, rather than on the individual. Right? Their narrowness then leaves so many people out that they also then are very harsh with. Right? But if you combine the two, then it works. Right? So you're kind, you're sensitive, but you know where you're trying to take this kindness and sensitivity. Otherwise, for the liberal, just being kind and sensitive, that's perfect. That's perfection. But it's not. Krishna consciousness is perfection. So if your kindness and niceness doesn't lead to Krishna conscious perfection, it is not kindness or niceness. It's violence. Right? The highest violence that you can commit is to take a soul and that they not understand who they are and their relationship with Krishna. That's the highest violence, though it may be applied so sweetly. Right? You'll take care of them nicely. You'll speak to them nicely. Right? You'll do everything for them nicely. But if that doesn't result in their Krishna consciousness, that's violence. Right? But if you're working with someone gently and nicely because you see this is what gets the result, and you have this goal, and you're getting it, then it's the proper application of having your, you know, your goal and seeing the individual and applying it. Does that make sense? But without starting from a Krishna conscious standard, what is the perspective going to be on what you look like? It'll be unlimited. There's 8,400,000 perspectives you could have on anything in this material world. Right? So that's the problem. So therefore, that's why we take the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. It's because the opinion of Krishna, the opinion of the Acharyas, the opinion of those who practice what Krishna and the Acharyas say, this is what's important to us. Because that perspective is how we look. Otherwise, there's unlimited perspective. So when we say perspective is the most important, yes. But only perspective that has substance. Otherwise, there's unlimited perspective. Everybody's got a perspective. Right? And that's nice. We have to consider that. Right? So in here then what's happening is you're looking at the what you want to get to, you're engaging yourself, which is perfection. But the problem is your conditioned nature isn't being fully addressed. So therefore, for short term things, for festivals, for emergencies, you can go flat out and it doesn't matter. Because you know there's an end, right? Christmas marathon ends, you know, on, you know, December 31st. Right? So therefore I can push for that long. You know what I'm saying? You know, Janmashtami, the fasting and all that's over at midnight. So I will go beyond what I normally can do. And therefore I will push forward. I'll make progressive my attempt to engage body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. But because I know the mind knows there's an end, therefore I'll do it. If I say that's every day. Every day we're going to fast from food and water. And it's kind of like, well, when do we eat? We don't. You know, we're austere. It wouldn't work. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is for emergencies, for short-term things, then that's great. It's important to be able to push oneself like that, to come to higher standards, to understand I can do it. But at the same time, as a general thing, you have to work at a level that you can actually accommodate. So you have to make a balance between emergency service and regular. And if you consider that, but it has to be considered in relationship to the precursor or, the Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? If you do like that, then the objectives of Krishna consciousness, the standards of Krishna consciousness will be met. It's just a matter of time. At the same time, the individual needs are addressed. So that's perfect. Right? So that's broad-mindedness. That's what Krishna consciousness gives. That is the Vedic standard. Modern is conservative, liberal. Vedic is broad-minded. Does that make sense? Vedic means what Prabhupada gives us as the perspective on the Vedic literatures. I don't mean what you can misconstrue so you can throw out the Vedas. We're not interested in those foolish notions. Right? We only know about the Vedas from Prabhupada. Right? So therefore, Veda means that perspective that Prabhupada gives us through the Parampara, from Rupa Goswami, through Lord Chaitanya, back to Radha and Krishna. That's what we mean by Vedic culture. Right? Is that okay? You had something? What was their qualification to enter Vaikuntha? Because they were Brahman realized. So, the Kumaras, what is their qualification to enter Vaikuntha since they're Brahman realized? So, those on the Brahman platform can go into Brahman. They can move anywhere. But we hear about that there are tridents surrounding Goloka. So someone who's only on this platform, they can get to Vaikuntha. They can't get to Goloka. So they can visit Vaikuntha, but generally they won't stay because there's nothing much of interest there because they're interested in their Brahman platform. So they'll be into their meditation or their tapasya or some other austere form. Right? As we mentioned before, the Brahman platform, the form has some use to a point, but at one point it's dropped. But the mentality of being unattached to the results of activity, that's useful. Being detached from material nature, being unattached to results, that's useful. So it's mood, your general concept is okay. But its form is lost. So when they go to Vaikuntha, they'll only visit and then leave. They won't stay there because the form is not so important to them. But here, by the Lord's mercy, then they were able to appreciate that form. Right? And we also see here is that this all happens still outside. They're technically not. You're in Vaikuntha, but Vaikuntha happens inside the seventh gate. Right? Because that's where the Lord sits. Now, if the Lord comes out, then it's happening at the sixth gate or fifth gate or wherever he is. So where the Lord is, that's Vaikuntha. Right? Where the Lord is interacting with his devotees, that would be Vaikuntha. So then here, because of this interaction, now they've gotten that mercy. Like that. Because otherwise, Durvasa Muni also is able to enter Vaikuntha, and he's just a yogi. Right? But a yogi who can go to Brahmaloka. But he wouldn't stay there. You don't hear of him. He visited Vaikuntha. You don't hear of him. Now he became a great devotee, and then now goes and sits in Swetadweep with the Lord. And no, after going back and getting the mercy of Ambarish Maharaj, he went back to Brahmaloka. And in Brahmaloka, therefore, he was glorifying the position of the bhakti yogis, you know, above other yogis, like that. But still he went to Brahmaloka, because yoga is his passion, like that. So then, does that make sense? Like that, yeah. Okay, last, yeah, okay, go ahead. How did they get interest in sing? Means, how would the four Kumaras being Brahman realize, how would they be interested? Because they've grown up in Satya Loka. So, see, the Brahmavadis don't really have problem with form. They're just not so, it's not so interest. It's not their focus. You know what I'm saying? Means, Sukadeva Goswami, when he's running through the forest, it's not that he doesn't know what's water, what's trees, what's girls taking a bath. Otherwise, why didn't it say he fell into the pond or bump into the tree? So he can tell differences in Brahman, but what he's appreciating is the Brahman element, the potency element, not the pastime element. So even though the ladies are interacting, that's not so important. He can tell it's going on, but that's not where his consciousness is, like that. So therefore, you know, hearing about the different things, then they go and see these different aspects and all that. So it's not a problem. Is that okay? Okay. I had something to know about. So. Which is the supreme of controlling and enjoying? If we look at it from tattva, then we would have to say the controlling is supreme. Because to enjoy something, you have to be able to control it. Right? If I want to eat the samosa, I have to be in control of it. If someone else is in control of it, he's eating it. Right? You know, so it's who's in control. That's why generally you'll find that there's so much need of when people meet that there's the control. Because then that's your options for enjoying. Right? Does that make sense? So that you'll see is many times the major difficulty in relationships with other living entities is who's in control. Right? So depending upon how prominent that is, what culture it is, or whether it's masculine or feminine, then you have to very much establish that pecking order. Some it's established a little less, some it's more, like that. So, but it has to be there, because who's in control means your options for enjoyment are there. So your identity comes from your control. Right? What I can control is what I identify myself as. I can control the things in the kitchen, therefore I can identify as a cook. Or I can control my voice or a musical instrument, I can identify myself as a musician. Right? I can control a vehicle, so I'm a driver, like that. So what your identity goes with control. That's why when you can't control, then it throws off your identity. You become frustrated, you become angry. So therefore, if anybody does something or says something that anyway undermines your control, then immediately anger will come. Because then your frustration of who you are and what you can get, what enjoyment you can get, your options are lost or you know, in some way reduced. So that's there. But if we look at it from rasa, then enjoyment is supreme, because what's the use of controlling something if you don't enjoy it? I have millions of dollars, but I don't spend it on anything. I have a nice car, I don't use it. I have a nice house, I don't use it. I have nice food, I don't eat it. So therefore, from as far as relationship goes, then enjoyment's the supreme. So therefore, that same principle is, Krishna is the supreme Lord, but he's controlled by the devotees. Because actually the devotees are in the superior position in rasa. Because they control the experience. Right? He's the supreme controller, but they are the experience. Interacting with them is this. They are the one that generates the experience. Mother Yashoda wants to see Krishna as her son, so she's generating that. Then Krishna reciprocates with that. So then he's submissive to that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why when you get to the Braj level, it actually reverses. Because it's in its perfection of personalness. Right? Because in Vaikuntha you still have Krishna as a person, but he's God. So there's something that's beyond. You know? Like there's something you can't control. But because, so the rasa is only working at a certain level, but where Krishna completely surrenders himself completely to the devotee, so that rasa is at its utmost, technically he's dependent upon the devotee. The devotee becomes the superior. So in that, it's so fine and so subtle, unless one has the surrender of that 100%, like in Braj, Yoga Maya won't allow you to be involved. Because Krishna will get hurt. Right? Nothing hurts you more than surrendering and not being reciprocated. Like that. That hurts the most. Right? You're not surrendered, you don't know the guy and they insult you, that's one thing. But if you know the guy and you're good friends and they insult you, that hurts more. So therefore in Krishna, the degree he surrenders there, that's the point. Because the point is this, what mood he's going to reciprocate with. So that's what makes Braj different from Mathura or Dwarka or Vaikuntha. It's because he will give himself 100%. Right? Dwarka, it's 50%. Right? The 50% of unlimited is still pretty big. Right? So it's not a problem. But Vrindavan is 100%. And the devotees there, that's all that's important to them, is that taking care of Krishna in that way. That's why even though the situations in which they serve Krishna are much more opulent and much more amazing than anywhere in the cosmic creation, that's not what's important to them. What's important is it good for Krishna? That's all. While in Vaikuntha, we see, wow, they look at this gate, look at that gate. Isn't God great? He has such a wonderful place. But you're starting from the field. You're starting from Sankarshan. But in Vrindavan, they're not starting from Sankarshan. They're starting from Dira Lalita. So Dira Lalita means he surrenders himself. Right? So that's special. That's very delicate. That's why unless there's no Purusha Bhav, one, you're not going to deal with those devotees because they're not going to have it. You know? And at the same time is because you're absorbed in something else, you can't give that 100% to Krishna. And then he'll feel bad. Right? And the Brajvasis aren't about to allow that to happen. Therefore, here we are. Right, you know? Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here and continue with any questions after a few minutes.